Well, kid, if you're watching this, then you made it. Well, this far, at least. What I'm about to tell you might seem crazy, but it's important that you understand what's about to happen next. This world you know, battered and broken, is not the world that was intended. There are those that believe humanity was always fated to destroy itself. They'll tell you this future will always be inevitable. But this is a lie. You see, we perceive time and space around us as fixed, a clock steadily ticking ever forward. However, the lines between the past, present, and future are an illusion. Nothing but a thin veil behind which lies the path to many possibilities. I have left you everything you need to put things right. But be careful. Not all is what it seems. You must finish what I could not.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
So no pressure then.
Everyone, and welcome back to the VR Chat Show. It's a pleasure to have you here with us. My name is Alex VR. I am the host of this magnificent episode. I'm also the host of Between Realities over on YouTube. Go check it out. It's a pleasure to have you here with us. We are inside of Rec Room within a world that has been faithfully recreated to represent the new VR game Wanderer. And joining us from the Wanderer team today, we have two magnificent people. We have Sam Romlu, the founder and executive producer at the Wanderer team, and we have Sebastian Dengal, a VR engineer and developer on the Wanderer team as well. Thank you for joining us, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Yes, what do you think of the space? Is it does it do it justice?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's amazing how much detail.
Yeah, we've both spent a lot of time within the game.
Small shapes.
Looks amazing.
Yes, we really do have a fantastic team of artists and amazing Rec Room personalities here that have pulled this place together for the VR Chat Show this week. And before we get started, we should take a minute to introduce everyone who's joined us here on these questionable couches. First of all, we do have a small team of YouTubers from themagnificentyoutube.com who make incredible videos. One of them is my buddy and co-host Skiva from the Between Realities podcast. Thanks for joining
What's up,
us,
y'all?
Skiva. We've also got Betty from Creeper Betty PSVR. Hey, Betty, how's it going? Thanks for being here.
Good. Thank you.
Hey, there's Dark Angel over there. Hey, Dark Angel, how you doing?
Hey. Pretty good.
Oh, and it's Jason, the Livinator. Our dude, Jason. What's up, the Livinator? Thanks for being here, man. Doing great. Now, in addition to the YouTubers, like I mentioned, we do have artists and people who have pulled this space together. Velp over there, our editor, and does animations here. What's up, Velp? Thanks for being here. There's Noctado over there, the artist. Yep, one of our amazing and talented artists, as well as Misery. Hello, Misery. Thanks for being here and doing amazing art. Ondog. Hey, Ondog. One of our artists here as well. Thanks for being here. Papaya. Hey, Papaya, another artist, and Betty, of course, an artist. Oh, and let's shout it out to Lenny, too, another one of our artists here in the room. So how's it feel? Do you feel like you're sitting in Wanderer right now? Have we set the stage for this conversation?
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So before we talk about the game, before the show, we kind of started getting into a little bit about the company history. Sam, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your history in the gaming industry and how the Wanderer team has come together.
Yeah, sure. I'll try and keep it brief because I've been in the space for a very long time and I don't really want to reveal how old I am. But we've been in the creative tech sector, which essentially was websites, for almost 20 years. And so that was kind of our foray into it. So we've got a creative tech studio. And then as we kind of went along, VR became one of the things we were developing on, mainly for clients. one of our team actually started his own studio, game studio, and essentially what we did is we decided to joint venture on a VR game. We could really see the potential of this platform and technology. And you know, back then, which was about 2016, when we initially had the idea for Wandra, it was very, very early days. There wasn't a lot around. There wasn't a lot of good stuff around. So we kind of had this amazing, you know, this idea of imagine if you could go back into moments of history and relive moments in time. And like be a fly on the wall was kind of the idea, essentially. And so we put a deck together of, you know, Wanderer, the idea about it, this time travel adventure game. And we got a tiny, tiny bit of funding, which made us kind of feel like, oh, someone likes our idea, so let's put all of our resources and money into doing this. And for the next 3 years, we tried to get it funded, basically. So, yeah, and then we did finally get it funded in 2019, and we were able to come together properly as a team. So we took people from both studios, combined the team and formed Wanderer, essentially. But we've kept the two studio names, M-Theory and Oddboy, as publishers, essentially, of the game. So, but it is one combined team. And from there, we started adding people to the team. And Seb joined later that year, didn't you, Seb? Like in July, August, yeah. September, something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And so Seb's one of the originals. Yeah. Yeah, and then we, you know, put a team together and got straight into production, essentially. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, good for you. And you know, Wanderer is a pretty new release, right? It came out on January 27th, right?
Yeah, yeah.
January 27th on PSVR and Steam, which is awesome. I'm sure PSVR yes. crowd is amazed and they love to have a game like Wanderer on their platform. Sebastian, what were you doing before all of this happened? Were you in VR development or did you kind of start your development journey in virtual reality?
I was almost straight out of uni, which was amazing to get a chance to work here immediately after. I basically made a game during uni. Put it on an arcade machine in like a public space. And when these guys were scouting for employees, they saw it and was like, whoa, it's really cool. Does anyone want to work with us? And I was really excited to jump on.
One of the lucky few.
Yeah, now we've got him. Selected. We've got him for life now.
Nice. Good job. Well, it looks like you're doing something right because all it takes is one quick glimpse at Wanderer to tell that it's not just some shovelware game, you know, that you should just ignore, you know what I mean? Like you've done something really, really special and you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but why don't you give us like the true elevator pitch? Like what is going on in Wanderer?
Well, before I dive into that really quickly, a little bit of an Easter egg in the game potentially is you might notice Sebastian's name in there somewhere. I don't know if anyone's recognized
all right.
but he snuck it
I
in
think
there.
All of our names.
All of our names are in there at some point. So, but Sebastian's is one of the first ones you see on a desk with a nameplate, but we've tried to make sure that all the teams, core teams' names are throughout the experience. So have a look next time. You know, you'll pick up wine bottles and there'll be last names and first names. You know, like we're making
billboards
wine,
as well.
Yeah, billboards once you go into certain worlds and stuff, and just keep an eye out. It's just quite interesting, you know, and quite nice that we've been able to do that. But so sorry, Alex, I guess elevator pitch is it's a, you know, Wanderer's a time traveling adventure game where you're thrust into moments of time and are there to essentially change the course of history. So history's gone a little astray, as it does in time travel, you know, adventures, and you're there to figure out what's going on and how you might be able to set things right. And you know, you soon find out that actually you've got maybe some adversaries out there who are maybe not so keen on history being changed back to what it was like. And then of course you've got your amazing companion Sam, who was not named after me, but he's floating around the room somewhere. And yeah, I don't think I'm that annoying. I mean, I can be. I will be honest, but. You know, he is there alongside you to help you. And I think if I can just talk about Sam for a quick minute, you know, he's one of those characters like like you'd find in sort of any good story. They're there to give you a little bit of humor, relief, you know, but then be your guide. And so I think what's really nice about it is over time he just grows on you, and because you're there with him across the way, you become quite attached to him. And I won't reveal too much of the story, you know, but I think you kind of, you know, as annoying as he can be, he's your mate through it all. So yeah. I mean, Seb, did you want to add anything to any of that?
No, not really. Good job not really spoiling anything.
Yeah, that's important. I'm anti-spoiler kind of guy myself. Like, cool, I like cool. to experience stuff firsthand as much as possible. I came in here and I'm like, okay, I guess that's what the concert's going to look like. And
I guess
there's going to be a snow area over there. You know, so I'll deal with it for the VR chat show, of course. So it's a time travel game. When I first got in there, like my first impression was almost like the game missed. Got like the Half-Life Alyx treatment, you know, like it kind of has this like puzzle element, but there's like some creepiness, and like visual integrity of the game is, in my opinion, is really spot on. It's gorgeous, and the environments are very, very immersive. And when you have this mechanic of time travel, you can basically go anywhere and do anything. Like, these are, it's like limitless, you know. How did you kind of like funnel it down into the choice? You don't have to reveal all the choices, what they all were. Kind of like funnel, like peel away the layers and get to like, okay, these are going to be the places and times that you go.
I mean, and I know more about this probably than Seb does from Inception wise, but our thinking was right from the beginning that with VR, I mean, you can literally put people into spaces that you could never actually ever go to. So that was something that we were really, really conscious of and keen to kind of, you know, kind of play up. The other thing was, what are the historical moments that people really want to explore? Where would you love to be? Where would you kind of go, oh my God, if I could have been a fly on the wall in this situation, how could we do that? And then on the other side of that was, well, how could we elevate historical moments that aren't so well known? How could we elevate women in this space? You know, it came up earlier on in this conversation. I think, you know, history to me personally is what's been documented at the time. So it's not necessarily true history. So it can be really, really tricky to try and find stuff, because if it's not documented, it didn't happen, right? So a lot of that, while you might not see a lot of that diversity right now, the plan is to bring that in. We knew that what we wanted to do was get people into the game, you know, into things that they were just going to be wowed by, that they could recognize and kind of go, yes, I want to be there. And so of course the moon came up as something that, if you could be anywhere, where would you want to be? And hey, in VR, we can put you on the moon. And then other stories started to come out, like, well, everyone wants to explore what a war environment would look like, not necessarily always battling, but what could that environment be? And then we started to think about, well, what do we want to do to make sure that the environments themselves were diverse, you know, so that you felt like they were quite different. So everything from your home base to then going to the moon. And Alyx, you've been to the moon, right? And I'm not giving anything away, because everyone knows there's a moon. And then there's a Mayan jungles. Like, just imagine being, you know, like we were thinking Machu Picchu and all of that sort of stuff. And so that's kind of how we started to think about the sort of content. And interestingly enough, our demo that we created, that we were pitching out, was actually of the Wright brothers. And so the demo actually showed, and I'd love to actually see if we could find some video of our demo for people to see the original start of Wanderer. But the whole idea was, you know, the little puzzle that you played in there was to document the first flight, and that was going to be linked to the moon as, you know, like the starting of a space race story. So at the end of the demo, you did that, and then at the end of it, you got to go to the moon. And when we went into production, that story just didn't fit with what we were trying to do with the bigger picture. So it kind of got canned. But it was a still really great demo that obviously got us the project. But so I mean, that's essentially how we did it. And then the team, you know, our creative directors, spend a lot of time with the writers as well, then going, well, how do you put these together? So the first thing we did after we kind of got the funding was go, well, what's our overlying story? Like, we knew it was a time travel adventure game. We didn't even have a character at that point, you know, like an actual character name or anything. And so then we started to go, well, what is the reason for this? Why are you traveling through time putting things right? You know, what's happened? And so we put a bed down of the story, which you guys will hopefully see when Wanderer 2 and then Wanderer 3 comes out. You know, we'll try and run really hard. And so then we kind of go, okay, that's what we want to do. I know, right? And then what would happen in one? How could we set the scene? How can we get people in here? What can we do to do that? And then we can explore more in two and three. And
I could just listen to you talk all day. All right. I don't, no worries.
I'm like Samuel. So. I tell you what. Yeah.
So, Sebastian, you know, a lot of VR games, period, kind of take place in like a spot, you know, like there's like survival games, you know, like the forest, like you're in the forest the whole time, you know. Wanderer, you know, after an hour, you're in 3, 4, 5 different environments. All one's a jungle, one's a moon, and you have found a way to kind of almost seamlessly transport you from one environment to another. Has this been a challenge from a, like, what challenges are there from a development standpoint to make something like that happen?
Initially, we wanted it to be like in the original demo, like you just picked up an item and immediately were transported to the Wright Brothers level. So we wanted to get something like that, just instant seamless travel. But we quickly ran into problems with memory. Like, you can only load so much, especially on PlayStation. So went through a few ideas and trying to like have a loading screen, and it just didn't work. So what we ended up doing is, as soon as you like pick up an item and put it in the watch, then that's when the level starts loading. And you can still play in the level and go around, so it doesn't feel like a loading screen as much. But as soon as it finishes loading, face to white, and you're transported to this level, and in the background we're hiding everything and deleting all the items and carrying over all the items we want to carry over, and then showing the new level. And that ended up being the most seamless way. And we did a lot of work trying to reduce the load times as well. Like, I think the initial PlayStation load time that we had was like 30 seconds, which was a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our initial idea was, you're putting the warp item in and you're transported into this like time bubble immediately while it's loading. And when we were testing that, it's just, we just thought, this is just a loading screen. Feels terrible. So yeah, the end result was what we have now.
Really, really important to us that we didn't lose that immersion factor, you know, in VR. And especially because you're time traveling, you're meant to feel like you're in this historical place or wherever you are, and you'll feel like you're right there, and then you want to be transported. The worst thing was to feel like we broke that, you know, and you knew. And I think, I mean, the guys have done such an amazing job with, and I remember, you know, the trials and tribulations of this and trying to get it right, but it was such an important thing to get right. As you know, some of the bugs that we've had, this was one of the things that we wanted to make sure no one felt like the immersion was broken, you know, and I think it's come out so amazing. Yeah. Like,
our setup was so unique that we had to hire someone, Lance, one of our developers, to edit the engine code just so the lighting and everything would work. Because we kind of went against the grain with some of the stuff with Unreal Engine and ran into some problems because of it. But I think the end result ended up being pretty good. Avoided a lot of issues.
Yeah, and yeah, I think
you guys nailed
it. I remember when we first you know, when we had the first one, which was you basically picked up something. Because in VR, obviously, when anyone goes into VR, the first thing you do is pick stuff around you. It's just natural. And so we wanted to make the most of that idea that you're just picking things up. And so one of the things you picked up in the demo took you somewhere else. And it was such a surprising moment because up until then you were just picking up stuff, grabbing, throwing stuff around the world. And then you picked up this wrench. And it seemed like an everyday object in the space. And you picked it up and the next thing you're transported. And I don't know if anyone's watched the movie Tomorrowland, but it was a very, very similar idea. So what we found was that almost everyone who did this immediately dropped it because they didn't, you know, they didn't kind of reconcile what was happening. And so that was exactly the effect we'd wanted. And so when we went with the new effect, there was a little bit of concern of, is this going to have that same element of surprise and wonder? Because there is, you know, there is a moment that you know something's happening. And so instead, you know, the team have done a great job of hyping that moment. So when you're, you know, when you're putting the first artifact in, you can feel and see it. Like, you know, everything feels charged, right? And so you put that in and then the whole thing just changes. You know something's going to happen. And of course we use the moon as our first place to travel to because we want it and we've seen people just get blown away, you know. And so I think just the sequence of events, while it seems in the game that all of this is very organic, all of that takes so much planning and consideration. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you've done a really good job of delivering that immersive experience for your players. You know, I went into it like thinking about all of this stuff. You know, I'm like, how could you, like, what, they're just going to like flip my world over and over and over again? Like, let's see. And I like, yes. You know, grab the item and like, I can feel that buffer, you know, like I'm thinking, oh, they're probably loading my level right now. You know, like I was thinking this stuff to myself, but I honestly believe that 9 out of 10 players, that's not going to cross their mind. And they're just going to be foom, 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 flipping in and out, moving between environments and just having a blast doing it. So kudos to you, Seb, and the development team for nailing it. Absolutely. So is Wanderer, like, is it done? Is this like, you know, packaged, bow on it, shipped, all set? Or can we expect something else coming, maybe in form of DLC or updates or anything like that?
We can't give too much away, but Wanderer is... Mm-hmm. Wanderer 1, as you've seen it now, just called Wanderer, obviously, is one of a 3-part series. It was always meant as a 3-part series. And we would love to do the 2 other parts. I mean, anyone who wants to continue the story would just absolutely, like, we want to finish the story. We've got, you know, there's not enough to explore in one game, right? We want to go to so many other moments in time. We want to revisit some of our awesome characters as well, like Tesla. Come on, who's had enough of him? And, you know, Jimmy and the crew, you know, and Janice, good old Janice. But I guess that's the thing is for us, we just felt like there was so much content. And I'll tell a little bit of a kind of early story of where we actually thought Wanderer would be. Was originally we were thinking of it as very much an episodic style series. So if you think about how you might consume a TV series, you know, we were thinking that once we hit the base of the game, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but was that every 3 months we would reveal a new episode. And so that's actually how we pitched it originally. We thought that episodic VR would have been along the way a lot, you know, when we were doing this, we thought that's kind of where the future was going. Interestingly enough, the person who kind of scouted us said, look, just put it into one game, you know, and do it as a full length game instead. And so we kind of, even then we were like, well, there's so much to explore. let's look at it as a 3-part series. And so there's some really cool stuff that, you know, we're working on now, essentially, for 2. So the whole story's actually been written. You know, if you can imagine someone's done the key story, now we're kind of delving into, but how does that unfold over the second one, you know, what characters might there be and all that. So look, we'd obviously really love to. We're going back a step into something really small. In terms of a DLC, we've got the original soundtrack, which we're just finishing touches on, which I think anyone who's been in the game the sound makes up so much of the game.
It's really good.
Yeah, and there's just moments. I mean, I can't get, you know, and you haven't got to the song yet, but the song I just can't get out of my head, you know, like, and so we're putting that together, and that'll be available soon in the next few weeks, we're hoping. You know, so then you can listen to Wanderer while you're going about your day business. But I guess that's the thing, is there probably won't be a lot more playable content in the game. You know, we've probably got quite far, Seb, with some of the fixes and stuff. You guys have been working really, really hard to get all the, you know, patches done. Yeah.
Now we're down to like tiny issues and some quality of life things.
Yeah, nice. And for us, accessibility is really, really important. So we knew that we had a deadline. We had to ship the game. And so there were a few things missing that we always planned, which was English subtitles to begin with. You know, we had seated play wasn't working quite well on PC. And so all of those have come out. And now we're working on translated subtitles as well. Like, we're just conscious we want as many people as possible to play Wanderer. So we're looking at kind of about 6 to 8 languages as our core. We're also talking to platform, you know, so really for the moment, it's getting Wanderer out as far as wide as possible. So probably less around content and more about distribution. And then starting on the next one, which, you know, look, I guess as game development goes, it is going to be a few years away, right? But it's super exciting being able to work on some of that content. Now I'm thinking about the sort of things that we would love to be, you know, the areas we'd love to be in and how they might play out. So all I can say is expect that, you know, what you see here in this room and all the variation that you see here, we want more of that variation, you know? Yeah.
Nice. Well, and hey, thanks for not doing the episodic thing, because at first I thought that was going to be the way to do it as well. But then like I did Vader Immortal episode 1 and like then I was left high and dry and I never went back for episodes 2 or 3. And I definitely would have played all the way through if I had it, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think you guys made the right choice, allowing people to really sink their teeth in, get immersed, become the character and not have the plug pulled on them. It just as things are starting to get good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think at this point, it's probably a good time to bounce things over to the couch and we'll have Jason pull some questions in for us from the audience.
Sure. Well, actually, does anybody have one? Because I wanted to make a comment on something too. All right, Skeeves.
Hey, so this game for me had a couple of real jaw-dropping moments. And one of the very first early on jaw-dropping moments for me was looking at my watch and hitting the button and having Sam, the watch face, pop off the watch, and the little helicopter thing starts spinning around and fly around the room. How did you guys come up with the idea for how that would work and what it would look like and all that stuff?
Well, initially we wanted it to be like part of the hint system, which I guess it kind of is right now, but you would pop him off and he would fly over to some place and say like, hey, maybe try this. Yeah, ended up being too much work doing that for pretty much every puzzle, but he's still flying around and he's still like that flying around system is still used in some points in the game.
I mean, I remember in terms of development, with actually getting that working, it was really, really tricky, you know. But the effect when it happened, because I was a lot more high level on this, so I wasn't kind of in the weeds, you know. I'm not a developer, you probably guess that. And so for me, I'd be able to look at moments though and try it, and kind of had seen this idea of what the guys were trying to do, you know, and on Discord being across all the different things going, oh shit, that's not going to work. Oh, okay, maybe they got it working. No, they didn't. You know, so that was a lot of kind of my like insights, is just seeing a lot of that conversation play out and then actually being able to try it at certain points in the game. And the effect is just so unique, right? You know, and being able to have that. And I think if you think about Samuel as well, it really adds to the character. You know, so suddenly you go from something that's just static. So even the watch face, you know, obviously there's all of these things that we looked at that how can you make it look like you literally have a companion there with you? And And I don't know how you guys play, but you almost, you miss it when he doesn't comment. Or it's kind of like, wait, have you, you not got anything to say? Or you look at him and, you know, and I'm saying him, right? You think of him as him. And he's essentially just a very, he's a very smart watch, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
There he is.
He's flying by us right now.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. Here I am. I'm, you know, I'm listening to you. And I mean, you should just change him into the smart Alec, you know, just has like bursts of talk. So I think I remember the guys trying really, really hard to kind of make sure that the effect of popping as well. I remember that was quite hard. JC was spending a lot of time on how it pops out. And so what you guys see is a very seamless thing. There's a lot of hard work behind, you know?
It was so much like small tricky stuff. Like, yeah, when you're popping him out, he's like actually attached to something that I think JC named the watch cart, which is like a thing on the ground that drives around.
Which is really
why in some places he doesn't like fly over benches and stuff. In some places. And yeah, like when you're moving your head, you want him at head level, so he's like flying up and down. And then what happens if you grab him and then you just throw him away? We had to do like an unfold animation and like grabbing him with physics and then attaching him to that.
Anybody get the anybody get the achievement?
I did. Chuck him right away.
I mean, how many people did try and throw him out the window?
That was also something we had to work hard on. Like, what if people throw stuff out the window? What would happen with the items?
Where would really be the most
logical place to put them back?
Yeah. I mean, there's that doll. The doll is literally there for that, right?
Yeah. I think our like save system went through like 4 big changes just because like you throw something out the window, where do you expect it to be? You take it to a new level, throw it out the window there. Where do you expect it to be?
So I restarted on a different chapter one time. I like stopped my save and then went to a chapter. And when you do that, all of the items go to like wherever I guess you guys thought was like the spot that made the most
sense. Well, it's like someone's put a cleanup crew in your room and gone, you know what? This is not okay that you've got stuff all over the floor.
It's the cockroaches.
This is where we were hoping we would be able to hint to people. You know?
We're working on as well. Trying to make that like not as like devastating when you load a chapter and everything is just gone.
Honestly, you guys like organized me a little bit. I was like, okay, cool. This is good. I can deal with this.
I think Darky ran into that too, where you lost an item where you had to go back and find it, right? On the one you were doing. Yeah. Yes. She got to a stopping point. Yeah, but I was talking to her about it, and then I think she finally found the item and was able to continue on. But she was worried that she wasn't going to be able to continue on the game. But that's us.
It's been a real mixed thing, you know, in terms of some people kind of going, oh, I want a bigger inventory system and, you know, I want more of a place to put. But if you look around the apartment, there's actually a lot of great places you can put. I mean, we've, you know, that cupboard there essentially was right, you know, the white one is there for, like, I mean, I personally treat it where all my artifacts go. But I think the thing is, we've done that on purpose. We wanted you to realize as you play that there are things that you need throughout these places. And if you're able to pick up everything and put everything in your backpack, which you also, we wanted that to be more realistic, right? We didn't want it like every other adventure game where you can put so much in your backpack. You're like, how am I actually wandering around this space? And this is you walking around. You know, this game is meant to be that. And because you're in VR, it very much feels like that. So we wanted to make sure that was a little bit more realistic. Of course, Samuel came into play because we're like, initially, you literally could only hold things like one in one hand, one in the other, you know, and put something on the watch once to hold it. So you could literally only have 3 things. And, you know, that wasn't going to be enough. It wasn't going to be enough. But I think it's just done really smartly. The way you can upgrade him as well, you know, to allow for it. We want people to feel that sense of achievement as they go through. And I think for anyone who's played the game long enough, you get to a point where you are, like Alex, you said, you pick up something, you put it in there, you go and grab your thing, you come back, drop it, put the other thing, and you kind of become really formulaic about it. It's like, no, I need to get there, and I know I need this. I'm going to go and do that. you know, and then you're like, oh, damn, I need this. But to us, it's part of that gameplay, you know, that you actually realize, oh, that was in that time and I need to go and get that. And I saw that there and it's remembering that. So, look, it does rely on that a little bit, you know. I'm quite organized. So I'm like, I'll pick up everything, go and take it back to my apartment, put them all out and then go, okay, I know I've got all this stuff here. So I get really, really annoyed when I'm like, damn, I didn't pick the box of crayons up. You know, why would I have thought to do that?
We were actually really worried that a lot of people would be really annoyed with the like system of everything stays where it goes and you would lose items and you just get frustrated. But seems like most people kind of appreciate the like the persistence of what you're doing. Like what you're doing in a level actually stays that way.
Yeah, everything's exactly where you left it every time you go to the areas. And that's, yeah, that is for me, because I could be a very forgetful guy myself too. So I'm like you, Sam, I'm organized. I got my stuff there, the things I'm going to need to use, the stuff I've used and maybe need to use again. Then I got all my traveling items in one section. And then I don't want to spoil anything else there, but the things that I know I need to bring to a particular place, I'll bring there. So they're just another factor that's out of the equation.
I think also the other thing is that what I was saying before about the surprising elements, like any good adventure game. And, you know, Alex, you mentioned Myst earlier and Half-Life Alyx, which actually came out halfway through development. And so for us, it was a really good checking point, you know, like, oh, checking against it to go, yeah, we're going, and people do want physicality. And Boneworks came out at the same time. So I'm sure, you know, Seb can probably expand on that a little bit. But one of the things that you find in adventure games is you have to have this sort of MacGyver-style mentality, right? Like, you want me to put these two things together? Like, I would never have imagined. But and I'm a real big fan of old school adventure games, and it was always about finding things that of course work together, but you never would have looked at them that way. And so that's what I really love about it, is that you find these things, you see them, but then later realize that it is actually quite important, you know, and how you could use it. And of course I won't give things away, but you know, there's a super soaker here somewhere. And that comes in handy in a couple of ways, you know, and surprising ways. And so I think that's also really fun to explore and find instead of just making them super, super logical.
I agree entirely. Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. Do we have another question on the couches?
Puzzle games are definitely like my wheelhouse. So I really enjoyed this. And I wanted to get that out there. Thank you so much for making a wonderful game. But I'm also really interested in music elements. So I'm curious as to, you know, the team of people or persons that helped to work on the music for the game, especially considering the element of time. I know there's a super treat section involving music here, but as far as, you know, to really sort of drive home that importance of time, there are a couple of music cues that you do hear throughout the game. So if you could tell us maybe a little more about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, to start with, actually, the team is essentially one person who then got someone to help him along the way near the end when we were like, we have a deadline. But he came on board actually very, very early. So when we were pitching the game at the beginning, we must have had a demo out, and he saw that and reached out to us. His name is James Dean. Not made up, of course. And he reached out to us and said, look, you know, I love the look of this, I want to do more in games. And actually, it might have been even before we had anything. And I was like, well, do you want to help us on this, you know? And so he did a lot of work for nothing, I'll be really honest, like when we were doing the demo. And it's just such a wonderful story to then, we were able to, when we got the funding to go, hey, guess what? We got it. Get involved. And essentially he was able to start up his own studio, you know, go out on his own, which he'd been wanting to do. And he has just been so amazing. Like I was just saying yesterday, because I'm literally just finalizing the original soundtrack and approving it. And I was listening to it, and I'm just like, God, this just brings back the game elements, the, you know, as you're doing it, I know exactly where I was when I'm listening to this element. And so it starts right from the beginning, you know, like right from the our tutorial scene, really, Montauk, where you get a sense of being in, and you know, like it's a certain time with the music playing and the effects there. There's obviously music all the way throughout, or sound effects as well, that indicate a change in atmosphere. So as well as the visual, you notice very much the soundscape changes as well. And so, you know, as we're also putting the soundtrack together, there's like the moon has its own slightly different soundtrack and all the different areas do as well. And James was wonderful. He basically did everything himself. He was Foley artist. He was lead singer, lead drummer. You'll get to see that a little bit later, Alex. But there's an original song in the game. You know, we licensed some songs as well that you'll hear backstage at some point. But the music, I mean, even right from the introduction screen, that music sets the scene. And we also know it plays a very important part in our trailers of getting that feeling. I don't know, Seb, what do you think? I mean, you know, with kind of, I guess, developing and then having that alongside,
It's been really, like, every time I interact with his systems, I've always been, like, amazed at, wow, there's so much to audio that, like, us non-audio developers never know, like, the amount of variations and permutations of play this music here, and then the next time that there's a beat, put this track into it and duck these instruments and increase the volume of these, and it all comes together to make a really good experience. And you never really realize it until you, at least for me, when I'm playing games, I like barely notice the music unless it's big parts of the game, like the drumming and stuff like that. But then when you're listening to the soundtrack of those games, you're like, wow, there's so much work put into this to make it all work.
And music is like, it really truly is like feeling and emotion translated into vibration. So if it's done right in a game, it shouldn't be what you're paying attention to. It should be providing a feeling. It should be providing
absolutely
atmosphere. Sounds like that's what's happening.
And a lot of times we obviously tested the game without the sound, and then you bring in the sound. And you know, I don't know how many trailers I watch without the sound. I'm like, it looks good. Then the sound comes in. I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, you know, we've it basically pulls it all together, you know. And if you imagine everything from the intro scene, I'm guessing most of you have probably done a little bit, at least up until the croc fight. And there's an intro scene in Montauk, and the music's a little bit more haunting as you start to go through. And then when you get to Boston, there's this refreshing sort of sense of awe and wonder, and that, and then you're on the boat. And it's the moment is for you to look around and take that time to absorb. And I think it just all just makes you feel like you've just been transported somewhere. And again, immersion, right? We want you to feel like you're actually there. So the music helps with that. Along the way, and the sense of drama that you create. I mean, the Mayan sounds as well, when you're there, you totally feel like you're, you know, you're immersed in it. And I think, again, without actually breaking all these parts down, you don't realize all the things that come together to make a great game. And then when you break them all down, you're like, it's a lot of bloody hard work that goes into this. And for the user, what you've done is made it so seamless. But they don't know what,
and we love and appreciate you guys for doing that. Like, we're all VR gamers, you know, like we
wouldn't
have amazing experiences to go through without all of that hard work. So thank you guys so much for everything that you've done to make Wanderer. And I know all of us will be, of course, looking forward to Wanderer 2 and 3, and we'll start calling this one Wanderer 1.
We'll come up with some better names.
Yep, Betty, Creeper Betty, PSVR.
Hi. Thank you again for everything and joining. I love the game. The question I have, and I know that you kind of touched base and said that, you know, it's hush hush, but do you have kind of, I got two questions, but do you have kind of an ETA of when like part two will come out? And then is there something up with the frogs? Because all of a sudden my apartment's full of frogs. I have so many frogs.
frogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they multiply? Do they make babies? Like, I just can't.
They're a little special because they're not actually part of any level. They're spawned in, and then that has to be treated differently for the save system, and gets really tricky. And then you can also like fish up more of them.
I used all my cockroaches to fish for my frogs. And then more cockroaches came. So, yeah. And then I went fishing again. And then for some reason, I'm just like, every time I come in, I have more frogs. So I have frogs everywhere, all over the place. It's so fun. I love them.
It's a real aesthetic.
Okay.
They're not supposed to multiply. Oh, but...
I think it's almost funny.
I have like 20 of them.
Oh, my God. I think it's almost a funny bug because it's kind of like, well, you've got these frogs here and... You know,
I will take a picture so you can see. I don't know where to send it, but I'll you know, yeah.
I'm sure Jason can get it to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And but I'm like, I'm okay. But I was telling these guys, like, I got so many frogs in my apartment right now. I'm like, are they supposed to multiply and make babies every time? Oh, Betty,
there was this one time I was playing and I'd come back. And then, I have a lot of problems with this frog, okay? Don't ask me about this frog. The first time I saw the frog, so we had done a set where you could try all the different functions within Wanderer. Is that the best way to call it, Zeb? You know, what frog did we call it?
We named it the panic room. Just a room with
the panic room, yeah. So it was basically everything that you could do, like shooting bows, you know, and this goddamn frog was in there. Now, it probably took me a good 15 minutes to go near this. I just don't like frogs running around in front of me. And so this is how real it was. It took me 15 minutes. And my partner, who's a creative director, is standing there. And at first he found it funny, you know, really funny. Because I was like, oh, I don't want to go near this frog. He's freaking me out. Then he got really annoyed because he wanted me to test the frog. And I'm refusing to go near this frog. And I literally had to close my eyes to pick up the frog. And so I'm used to him now, but it took me a long time. But every time in the game, there's this one time I was playing the game and I pulled it out, put it back in, and the frog's looking straight at me and there's another frog right behind him. And I'm like, God damn it. And they move slightly. They move slightly, right? Do you notice that every time you move and come back, they're
like different.
Slightly. Yeah, and so
like I didn't put you down. What are you doing over there?
These frogs kept advancing on me and multiplying. I'm like, I can't. I need to close this chapter off. You know, this is not okay. So I don't know. I kind of find it a bit funny, but oh damn, those frogs.
I'm okay with them, but I just like you're right. Like I set them up. I go, okay, you're gonna go here. You're gonna go here. And then I come back and like one's like over there and I'm like, I did not put you over there, but okay. You know, so.
And I'm ignoring the other question because I don't know. Look, honestly, you know, we're in the middle of talks and so these things take a while. We're very hopeful. We're very hopeful that it will happen. But I mean, Wanderer 1 was like 2.5 years, you know. We do want to go bigger and better, but that doesn't necessarily mean it would add more time. We would probably just do it with a bigger team. And I think what's amazing is that
a lot of the systems already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Seb's staying, right, Seb? But it is really like we just love that we've been able to set this up for what we really want to realize with the vision that we have for Wanderer. You know, we did it fairly. I mean, these guys did a lot of hours. You know, there's not been a lot of holidays, and I apologize, but I think everyone's just been so passionate about it as well. But you know, the guys are taking.
You can tell.
Yeah, and the guys are kind of taking a little bit easier at the moment in terms of just, you know, having a little bit of a break. You guys
deserve to take a break for sure.
Yeah.
So don't hold your breath, Betty, because it sounds like we'll be waiting a minute.
I mean, but look, when it, you know, when it does, keep in mind that we want to keep up with the times. So what we're hoping is for the same experience you have now, but in a couple of years, do you know what I mean? Like it'll be in the same scene. It won't be like you're playing Wonder One. Yeah. Like we want it to be for those generation headsets. And I will say our next priority is also getting on the Quest native. So that's something that would probably, that's the first thing. And then we'll be looking at two essentially. We've just got to make sure again, Wonder One accessible as possible. And then we go from there. Yeah.
I don't know if what I want to say, maybe not because it might be a spoiler for others, but like when you do certain things to a character, he kind of says something and it's unexpected.
I guess you could say I was busting someone's balls literally. In the game.
Yeah, don't bust my balls. Like, that was hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
It was actually Nock who discovered it, and I just had to work my way to that level really quick.
I just punched, and yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sam, is there anything that's kind of been unsaid? You know, like, you know, we've been talking about Wanderer. Is there like any big important aspect that we just need to kind of reiterate? Anything unsaid about Wanderer or the experience or today's interview?
Seb, did you want to talk about anything in particular?
Not really. I'm just very much in the tech side, and
most of it isn't as important.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I know that we're just part of our team, so
just making amazing stuff. Yeah, literally,
I'm just here talking. Humble. I have done nothing, so you know.
Like, the same system, the grabbing system.
Yeah. That, well, don't sell yourself short. Wanderer is amazing. Everyone who has tried it has nothing but great things to say, and you guys should all be celebrating right now. So thank you, Sam and Sebastian, so much from the Wanderer team for joining us here in Rec Room and going over the game, just chatting with us and having a good time with us. Everyone in the audience, thank you to my dirty couch people. Thank you to everyone who's catching this video on YouTube.
I don't know if I want to be referred to as that. But...
Hey, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. Please like the video.
Well, maybe sometimes. But...
Subscribe to the VR chat channel, everyone. We have more episodes coming with more amazing Rec Room environments, as well as more developers. Keep in mind, you are welcome to come and visit this environment in Rec Room. There's links in the description to all of that good stuff. Thank you so much. Have a great day / night, and we'll see you for the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Woohoo! That's a wrap! Woohoo!